Welcome to the Legion Outriders podcast, your source for the latest Legion news, opinion, and analysis. And now, the Outriders.
How's it going, Outriders? Matt, Jeff, and Dan back with our second week in exile. Gentlemen, how's it going?
I've been coloring on the walls with crayons. I haven't worn clothes in at least 3 weeks, even though, you know, I've only been exiled for 2 weeks, but it's getting to me.
You're a leader in the field, huh?
Yeah, you know.
Guess that's one good thing about doing a remote podcast now is we can do this without pants.
I'm wearing pants. Jeff, are you wearing pants?
I'm wearing shorts.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I guess some short pants. That's fine, too.
Skorts. But-
Skorts, yeah. I mean, it's got pleats in it. It's very nice. But anyways, there, just because we're all stuck at home for the most part doesn't mean that there isn't some hot and spicy Star Wars stuff coming our way, which we've got a lot to talk about, honestly, with some of the big announcements these last weeks. And we're going to get into that. But of course, well, Daniel, how are you doing? Are you going all Lord of the Flies like Jeff?
Not quite. Me and the missus actually went out to, for the first time in about three weeks and change, actually ordered some fast food, and I am both enjoying it and hating myself.
Disgusted by it.
Yes.
Just crying while he eats it in the shower. Yes.
yeah. It is kind of funny. I swear I have not eaten this much at home, but we're still trying to like hit up local businesses and things. But anyways, of course, we must start out. What's new in Star Wars news, Dan?
Honestly, not a lot, but that makes sense considering how the entire entertainment industry is kind of shut down with world events right now. So not a lot going on the Disney front, other than, you know, their only thing going on really is Disney Plus. And Star Wars specifically, but a little bit of sad news, unfortunately. Actor Andrew Jack passed away from complications from COVID-19 that's happening right now. And he was 76. For anyone not familiar with him, he played Major and then General Emmett in The Force Awakens and Last Jedi. He was the long white haired gentleman, most notably from in The Last Jedi, the scene where they're in the trenches and the guy spits out and says salt. He's the general standing up on the out of the trench looking through the binoculars. He also voiced Moloch, which was that big white worm enforcer at the very beginning of Solo, you know, the guy with the big bitchin' muscle car and those dogs who was chasing Solo through the city. He also voiced that character, but his main thing he doesn't do a lot of acting. He does a lot of vocal coaching, and he did on numbers of franchises. He did vocal coaching for many of the actors in Rogue One and Solo, Lord of the Rings, a lot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. And recently, currently in production, the newer Batman with our sparkly vampire Robert Pattinson playing the Batman.
Wait, another Batman?
Yeah, they're filming it right now. It's actually in production.
Wow, I had not heard anything about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's driving like a muscle car. It's not like a Batmobile anymore. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about
it. Yeah, it's very unconventional.
Is Jared Leto still involved?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, okay. Well, interesting. I guess I'll have to go look something up on that. Okay, well, that's news, I guess. What else? I know that there's some FFG general news as well.
Well, the FFG's warehouse is still not shipping new product. They are restocking, so there was some confusion on Facebook and a few other places about FFG. They're restocking released product, but they're not shipping new product. So if your online retailers or your FFG that is doing curbside pickup is getting restocks from FFG and you're wondering where all the new stuff is, they're holding new stuff until this is over to allow for those locations that have to close to have a little more fair chance at being able to sell the product.
Although I swear I saw somebody with a AAT. They were posting pictures up online.
Yeah, a few of them have squeaked out. Unfortunately, the people that have been posting haven't been very forthcoming of where they're obtaining it, which makes sense. They don't want to get their local game store in trouble or anything. But yes, AATs, a few of them have been posted on the Facebook page. A few, also the sprues from Cassian, Iden, and Vital Assets have been posted.
Oh, exciting.
It makes sense that they're holding on to all this stuff, though, and just doing restocks, because I feel like restocks are probably a smaller task than, you know, getting all of this new product out there.
It's nice to catch up, because I still don't have any Phase 2 troopers, and I really want to get some. Actually, I really want to try and paint up some clones this week. I know, I think I said that two weeks ago, but maybe this week will be the week.
Yeah. One thing I found with this situation is, you know, before this, I'm like, oh, I wish I had more time to do all this painting. And now that I have time, I find that my lack of time was not the reason why I'm not progressing with this.
Yeah, I think I've been very vocal about my distinct apathy for painting. I'll do it if there's nothing really better to do, but there's always something better to do is the problem.
Yeah, but looking at the sprues that were released, I really like what they've done with a few things now. Being this is my first miniature war game, once I do get Iden, this will be my first time working with sprues. But they added a lot of options.
Cool. It looks like we've got listed May release for Iden, Cassian, Vital Assets, AAT, assuming that they don't extend the moratorium on shipping new things out. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, FFG did update their upcoming products page, and I recommend everybody keep tabs on that page for the newest of when things are coming. But currently, as of recording, they've listed Iden, Cassian, Vital Assets, and the AAT official release to be in May. They don't have a specific date yet, but the month of May.
I definitely want the Vital Assets and the AAT. Really, really want that AAT.
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful model.
It looks pretty big from what people were posting up, so I'm excited to see it on the table for sure. What else is coming up?
For models, it looks like they're doing an every other month situation. I know in the past we had monthly releases, but I'm sure for this, you know, current situation that it'll be making it a little more stable to do every other month. But in June, we are slated to get the Republican Separatist paint sets. Those were announced late last year.
Okay.
That's, you know, I think they look good, but for me, I'd rather have models. I think it's good for people who don't have a lot of paint options. I pretty much have my whole setup, and every now and then, you know, add another color to it, but I don't really need a paint set.
Okay. What's after that, Jeff? July? We got some of the spoiled stuff from the streams.
Yeah, this is what I'm excited for. So we're going to see Padme, Cad Bane, the ARC Troopers, and Commando Droids. So a lot of good options for those Republic and Separatist players. I'm excited to get Padme on the board. I think she's going to be a great addition to the Republic Army and the ARC Troopers, man. I'm really excited about the ARC Troopers.
I think I'm going to be getting like one of each of those boxes at least. Well, probably two boxes in the droids.
Yeah, I'll probably get two ARCs. I think that those Commando Droids are going to be really nice for Separatists. Yeah. They look very threatening.
Yeah, I am not looking forward to having to face off against those on the table.
Are they going to beat you at your own game? Standing back and ranging in?
No, I'm scared of them.
I think they've got good options. Yeah, yeah, running into melee. Those shields and the vibroblades they have look really good.
No, I'm most scared of those that saboteur with the poison mines. Like, that's going to be insane.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, yeah. That should be good.
Yeah, they have a lot of options, a lot of threat in different forms. So, yeah, I think, like Dan said, the poison mines are going to be deadly.
Yeah, I definitely like my poison gun. Having poison mines seems pretty good too. And then rounding up the end of summer in September, what do we got there?
Oh, the good old I was gonna say Clan Inferno. No, Inferno Squad and Clan Ren. This is a everybody's getting something. Inferno, Clan Ren, Republic ATRT, and the Stap Riders.
Yeah, everybody gets something there. That's pretty good, and they all look extra juicy.
Oh yeah!
Oh, I'm so excited for Inferno Squad, but I gotta wait 5 months.
What?
5 months?
5 months. It's okay. We might be out of lockdown by then.
Yeah, hopefully.
Nothing for August though. That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing minis. Looks like on an every other month. So May, skipping June.
Yep.
Going to July and then skipping August and then going September.
Gotcha. There's another paint set or barricade a pack that they could put in for August, I guess.
I mean, unless they officially release a silhouette pack, but we'll get more into that later.
Oh, yeah. Shh. Quiet. Speaking of arts. But yeah, so stuff coming down the pipe. I'm definitely excited for a lot of these releases. I'm excited to play games again because I'm not one of those people. What does the tabletop simulator? But it seems like you guys now are. You've broken into that frontier for the Outriders. You've outridden, I mean, where, you know, thousands of other people I think have gone to at this point. But this is the first Outriders we've had over there. You guys got a game in last night, right?
Yes, and I'm proud to say that since lockdown, I have only lost one game.
Well, how many games have you played?
To the spoilers here.
I mean, number of games doesn't matter. I've only lost one out of one. But yes.
Good.
Well, if we're saying that, I've won all the games that I've played since lockdown. So, I mean, I'm on a roll.
Yeah, 100% win streak going on. Well done, sir. So, how was it setting up? As I don't own Tabletop Simulator. I've kind of had my eye on it for a little bit. I should probably just throw the $10 at it next time it's on sale. I think it feels like everything's on sale right now. So check into it. How was it getting it set up, configured, playing your first game? Walk me through it.
So it wasn't too hard. I went in, and this is what I would recommend to anybody. I went in a few weeks ago before Dan and I did this and just played around with Tabletop Simulator and specifically getting all the add-ons that I needed for Legion. I think it's just one, honestly, but getting that in there, making sure I knew what buttons did what. Mm-hmm. I think there's a helps page that'll tell you, you know, like, tab does this, and Dan, you know, reminded me a couple of them, but it's pretty basic. WASD moves the map around. You can spin units with Q and E, so it's a little intuitive if you've played games before.
Okay.
The setup itself is not super intuitive, so getting to know that before you go in, like building your army, spawning miniatures, getting the conditions and the objective and all that stuff set up, it takes a little bit of know-how. Luckily Dan did it in our game, but I do know how to do it. But it's still good to go in there when somebody's not waiting on you and
sure.
Kind of familiarize yourself.
Or have like a friend, like an Outrider there hanging out. It's actually, now that you guys have done it, and I can probably borrow one of y'all, maybe I could give it a try, because I think it'd be actually pretty good content. Maybe we could record it, put it up on our little fledgling YouTube channel too.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same as playing on the board. There's a little bit of, you know, learning curve with it.
Sure. It's much of a learning curve?
No, not too bad.
I wouldn't say so.
How did you play it, Dan?
Yeah, no, now I've been using Tabletop Simulator for quite some time now.
Okay.
A while ago, I had some family move out of state, and so because we played board games a lot, so to keep in touch, we all got Tabletop Simulator. So I've been playing it for quite some time now. The current add-on for Legion, and by the way, to back up a bit, Tabletop Simulator, it's on Steam.
Yep.
You just purchase the game, the core Tabletop Simulator game, and there are add-ons available through the Steam Workshop for hundreds and hundreds of board games out there.
And they don't charge for those, which is how I think they avoid getting sued.
Yeah, all those add-ons are free to download. Some games have more or less features. It depends, considering they're not supported by the official, you know, game manufacturers. It all depends on the actual mod creators on how much of the game features you put in. But at its core, Tabletop Simulator is literally just a tabletop and a physics engine. It doesn't enforce any of the game rules or turns or anything like that. It's up to the players to do that.
Oh, okay. So there's no engine kind of crunching and checking and making sure that so it's still like you're playing at a tabletop. It's just a virtual one.
Correct. Correct. It's just a virtual tabletop that allows you to manipulate pieces and tokens and whatnot moving around. But luckily the creator of the Legion mod, and I should have looked up his name before this. I apologize, sir. You've done a great benefit to the community, especially in these times, for being able to provide that for us. But he created a lot of scripting in the mod, so that there's literally a console, little computer monitor with some buttons below it, and you just click it and it loads the maps, it switches sides, it switches player colors. There's a lot of control built into that. It does the whole pregame, eliminating your conditions and deployments.
It looks like he's got a Patreon and goes under Tyrion, so...
Thank you for looking that up, sir. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely, if you play the mod, I highly recommend that you definitely help Tyrion out.
Hell yeah.
And then the other thing to remember with getting into TTS is it is going to take a little bit longer too. Dan and I's game took a couple hours last night, probably twice as long as it should have if you were playing on the actual table.
So 15 hours.
Yeah. The only issues I really have with Tabletop Simulator is the physics engine is a little fiddly. So if you're trying to place a mini, usually you have to pick it up and put it down a couple times to kind of scooch it into that place you want.
balance it on top of a barricade.
Yeah. I think what you can do too is, you know, if you're playing with your friend casually, you're like, hey, I'm just going to put this mini here. You're not really trying to, you're not on the $1 million on the line here. Put it as close as you can,
you know?
Right. Yeah. Put it as close as you can, call it good. And that speeds up some of the process. And then, you know, same thing with line of sight and just those little nuances that you, on a normal table, you could bend over and look at something or scoot something a little, nudge it. It's hard to do it in tabletop simulator. So you can get around that by having a friendly game.
Speaking of which, I just jogged my own memory because LJ messaged us right after we recorded the last episode and it's like, hey, could you give a shout out Invader League starting up? So Invader League is starting up. I think I saw a note today from, is it Zach that's doing that now?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's, I think, last couple of days of signups. I could be mistaken. I wish I had paid more.
Yeah, I don't have the Facebook page, but it is on the main Star Wars Legion page if you look.
Yeah, definitely check into it if it's something you want to get involved with, even if it might be too late. But I think you're probably good, at least for a couple more days, based on what I remember seeing. But yes, okay. So we'll look probably more into doing more TTS stuff, depending on how long this lockdown is going to be going. But tell me a little bit about the list that Jeff was 100% winning with. And Dan's got 0% wins with.
Yeah.
Or 100% losses. Let's put it in a positive one. 100% losses.
So, Dan, do you want to go first? I'll let you go first with your Iden list. I know how much you love it.
Oh, yeah. So, I did run an Iden Krennic list. Was Iden with her repeater, of course, and the her droid. With Overwatch, offensive push. Krennic with strict orders and commanding presence. Two Death Trooper squads, each with their heavy. Sniper strike teams. Two shore troopers with the T-21 and two mortars. So it's 10 activations, 794 points.
And then I had my Cassian and K2 list. Jyn, Cassian, K2. So I'm going to go off memory here. Bear with me a little bit. So I had Jyn. She was my commander. She was running her little dual-sided rifle slash pistol. Uh-huh. And then she had duck and cover. I had Cassian. He had his loadout with the pistol, the pistol sniper rifle. He had duck and cover and recon intel. And then on the sideboard, I just had Overwatch because I'm not too familiar with how I want to build him yet. And then I had K2SO. He was using Jyn's blaster, the 5.1 that's basically like a Z6 with crits. And then I had three Rebel Troopers. Each Rebel Trooper had the Astromech. I had three AT-RTs with the rotaries. And then I had two sniper teams with just the rifle. So kind of like a very basic build.
And R2-D2.
And R2-D2. Yep. Thank you, Dan.
Oh, of course.
So 12 activations, which was crazy. I've never run a 12 activation list. I think most I've hit is 11. And then it was 795 for the points.
Okay, just to clarify, I found the post here from Zach, and it's actually signups just started, so it's running through the 12th and the 27th of April. So if you can't get out of the house to go do some Star Warsing, doing some Legioning, season 5 Invader League, signups are now. Go do it. Do it now.
And if I remember correctly, the AAT, the Saber Tank, the Commando Droids and ARCs are already loaded in the mod, so they are legal for Invader League.
Ooh.
It'd be interesting to see how people work those in.
Yeah. Oh man, we're gonna have to see about getting one of those breakdowns of the list played and all that again. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'll talk to Zach.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Hey Zach. Hey buddy. what did you think about Cassian in K2?
So I'll talk about him from the Rebel player side. Absolutely loved him because I know Dan's gonna say how much he hated him. Absolutely loved him. Cassian, I ran him as an operative because I was using Jyn for my commander. She's got that courage 3. It's great. You know, not much stuff. I think she's the only commander outside of Luke that has courage higher than 2, right?
And she's up there.
Yeah. So Cassian, I forward deployed him. And then K2, he's a detachment. So speed 1 of Cassian. And then it was really nice because Cassian could do a lot of my work on the objectives. And I didn't have to worry about protecting K2 and still stuff got into range 1 of him. And I don't think he got shot until turn 3, maybe. And then I had Jyn in the back, just kind of issuing orders, doing her thing, grabbing objectives. And then everything else was supporting that forward line as it did what it needed to do and came back.
Very cool. Dan, what did you think?
Of Cassian and K2, well, they were yeah. both extremely annoying to deal with danger sense on Cassian. He was routinely rolling 5 to 7 white dice when I was attacking him. And with just that many white dice, you end up hitting blocks. So I was only rarely, you know, every third or fourth shot chipping one damage onto him.
And Cassian's ability to shed, so to take suppression and then shed suppression was very impressive. So first round, I played complete the mission, which suppression doesn't matter for him. And I wanted suppression on me, actually, because it got my danger sense up quicker. And then round two, I accidentally brought the card. What was the name of it? Volunteer mission, which when you issue an order to Cassian, he recovers. So I think at the end of round one, I had 11 suppression on Cassian. Didn't care. Round two, recover. All of it gone. I kept 2 for danger sense. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So for clarification and context, we were running recover the supplies on long march and clear conditions. So he was able to deploy Cassian on top of the middle box and deploy Jin on top of one of the back boxes. And then one of his sniper strike teams was able to scout up onto the other box. So he was sitting after round one on top of 3 boxes. So Cassian literally just grabbed and ran. I was able to get in range and lay into him with a lot of my long range units, but just that danger sense. And of course I exacerbated the issue by playing Annihilation Looms first turn, thinking I'd try and slow him down. But no, Cassian just took that stress and what's that meme where the guy's wiping his face saying so good?
Yeah. Yeah. That's playing right into his hands. It's kind of nice though. It feels very thematic that, the Imperial forces are having to react to the rebel, whatever battle plan that they've executed. Now we got to catch up and shoot them quick before they get away. No, kind of thing.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting Cassian to be that good. I mean, he really surprised me. I didn't take a shot with him until maybe turn 5, Dan, or turn 4.
Turn 4. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, his weapon was good, but for the most part, he was just focused on that objective, get it back to my side of the board and protect things along the way. I managed to keep him out of line of sight and having cover a lot, and that helped. But yeah, that danger sense, man, it was so good on him.
Did he end up surviving the entire game?
He did, yeah. We ended up calling it at the end of round 4. He had 2 wounds left on him, but he had suppression on them the whole time, so he was rolling a lot of dice.
Wow. And how did K2 play into all that?
Oh, my boy K2, so good. I'm really excited to see K2 in the game. First of all, you know, just he's a cool model, and yeah, he just plays really good. His defense is great. He's on the 50-50 side with the red defense dice, but he feels like an Imperial droid on the Rebel side, which is really nice.
Yeah, the armor with a red defense die, like it is very difficult to pull damage onto. Yeah, he is really hard to put damage onto K2. And in classic K2 fashion, of course, this was later in the game. I did get Iden up because I was still chasing after Cassian. And unfortunately, I had moved Iden into melee, you know, move range of K2. And he pulled the congratulations, you're being meleed. Do not resist. On Iden, and literally just tied up Iden for 2 turns, just keeping her in melee. And it was disgusting.
And his ability to share tokens with Cassian, so good, because he does calculate odds. He can do it on himself. He gets a dodge, aim, and suppression, whoever he does it to. So between you and Cassian, as long as you're ranged 1 to 2 of each other, you're issuing 4 tokens. And I think first turn I did it, and I calculate odds, get the aim, the dodge, and then I dodged for my second action. So I had 2 dodges and an aim on K2 and 2 dodges and an aim on Cassian as well. So just their synergy is so good. We haven't said synergy in a while, so synergy.
Yeah, we probably need to say it. Yeah, synergy. Have we said Magnet in a while?
No, okay, probably next episode. We'll get back to Magnet Butts.
All right, yeah, we'll get back to my
But yeah, their command card or his command cards, Cassian's, feel really thematic. And
we haven't had a bag of dicks in a while because, man, we were talking about fast food earlier. I could go for a big old bag of dicks.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Just bring back all the stuff, huh?
All right, homeboy Josh, there you go, bud. All right.
Hurricada.
Yeah.
Bring back all the old references.
Yeah. Okay, so Iden... Did she do
this? Yeah, Iden is not in melee at range. She is a powerhouse. I was running her essentially as a third Death Trooper squad.
Oh,
okay. As move up, shoot. And yeah, no, she, that T-50 repeater is amazing. I mean, it's almost an AT-ST in shots.
Wow. Nice.
Unfortunately, there are astromechs behind them repairing them, but I was able to put a lot of dents into those AT-RTs with her gun. Yeah, and her command cards are great too. Pulse scan, I was able to move up and get a no cover shot onto Cassian because he was, you know, ducking in between heavy cover. I don't know if anyone's played TTS. We were playing the Hoth map that was pre-built on TTS,
mm-hmm.
and there were a lot of trenches in there. And with Cassian scooting around all those trenches, having to be able to get a sharpshooter on there was great. Like I said, the only downside is when she does get into melee, I mean, she does have two red, but when you're fighting K2SO, that's not much you can do about that. But no, she was great. Her three pip, the tactical move. Oh my God, that round went crazy.
So strong.
Yes, because I had two Death Trooper squads and two sniper strike teams. Thanks to Krennic's entourage, I was able to put four special forces tokens out with that command card plus an item on herself. So all of them moved up and move, shoot, tapping the offensive pushes just to pile on aim tokens.
Oh yeah.
And it was just a disgusting round of damage.
And those Death Troopers are nothing to, you know, turn an eye to. Those, they hit hard. They're hard to kill. I got lucky and caught them out in the open a couple times, like light cover, or just managed to get some wounds in. And then luckily, depending on the red dice, get that one or two wounds through. But Death Troopers, man, they're tough.
The red saves with armor.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard.
Nice. Well, any other final thoughts on that game or those two guys?
It was a lot of fun. All the new units, Iden, Cassian, K2, they all feel really good on the board. I know it's one game, but I had a lot of fun playing that game. Iden is a big threat as she moves up that battlefield, which is, you know, I mean, how she should play. Cassian, very, very sneaky, you know, running around like a spy, grabbing objectives, hard to kill. And then K2 with his armor and being that Imperial unit on the Rebel side, man, he was a lot of fun to play. So yeah, it was good.
Oh, we didn't talk yet. Incognito was so annoying. where I'd move or aim, and I'm like, okay, I'll attack K2. Oh wait, he hasn't been shot yet. Incognito, he's not a valid target. I just wanted to front load some damage on him, but not being able to actually shoot him until you got close enough. Or until he did something. And Jeff was using him mainly as a token battery for Cassian.
Huh.
And it was just difficult to try and front load damage when you can't shoot him until you get close enough.
Yeah, he was just sitting in the middle of the field, basically waiting for units to move into his range and feeding to units or feeding tokens to Cassian along the way. But yeah, it's great. It was cool to have him out there just wide open. I think Dan went to shoot him one time and I was like, oh, you can't do that.
Mm-mm-mm. Cool. Well, sounds like you'll both be playing those guys some more in more games here, maybe on TTS. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back, and we've got a lot to discuss about the new tournament regulations doc that came out. Stand by, everybody. Don't go anywhere.
You are receiving the Legion Outriders podcast. Ending the transmission now would be most unfortunate. And now, the Outriders.
Welcome back, Outriders. We've got, well, a bit to discuss here. We got the new tournament regulations doc that came out with a little bit of a hot topic, it seems. I don't get it, but that's fine. Specifically, there's going to be a change to tiebreakers. And more importantly, silhouettes. I'm actually very excited for silhouettes. How about you guys?
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a good change, and I think that it's not going to come into play very often for casual games, but not at all probably. And then on those tournament games, it's, you know, every now and then.
Okay. But for those that may not know, silhouettes, we're talking about, it's basically an abstraction of how much area a miniature is supposed to occupy. So if you've got a question, the biggest scenario is, oh, Luke's lightsaber is sticking up above the hedge over there. Can I shoot that? Is it going to cause wounds? What's going on there? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel good is kind of what it comes down to. But now we've got these guidelines where we can check against the you've got the notes down here, 42 millimeters by 27 millimeters. This kind of cylinder that we can check against to say, well, that would be actually outside of that. And I really like this rule. This is something that has been used in War Machine for quite a bit, because you don't want to be penalized on like having a cool model, right? What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, so I'm glad that FFG was able to give us some content during the break as well. It's great that we're getting a defined size of a model now, because mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been on both ends, both, you know, shooting and receiving end of a weirdly placed model. Mm-hmm. I've had my Boba Fett rifle, you know, because he's holding his arm out with his rifle sticking out around corners. And I've taken out an entire squad of Wookiees just by the pure fact that that leader is holding that sword above his head over a piece of terrain.
Sorry, John.
Yeah. You got to hunch down when you're a Wookiee. Crouch.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a little interesting now that R2-D2 and Wookiees are physically the same size. But for game purposes, it's streamlining this a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is tournament purposes too, you know, and that's something that I think a lot of people are forgetting about. This is very specifically for tournaments. And I think it's good because it evens that playing field. If you have somebody who's running Wookiees and then you have another guy who's running, you know, R2 and maybe some astromechs that are harder to see, it you're looking at the same size model, so everything is a little bit more fair because you're shooting back and forth at a same size model, but the table still looks cool because you have Wookiees and you have R2 and you have these smaller units or, yeah, you know, things on flight stands.
Exactly. That was one of the first comments that I saw when the ARC troopers came out. It was like, oh, we're never going to play those. They're going to be too big. They're going to be sticking out everywhere. They're not going to be able to get cover. It's going to be a nightmare. Nobody's playing ARC troopers, at least not the ones on the flying stands. And that's a tragic loss for the game, something that should be so visually appealing and evocative of battles in Star Wars, that you're taking the height of a model because it's on the flight stand and taking out of your army because it gives, you know, it's too exposed. But now with this kind of rule, you're like, oh, okay, well, actually, it's only about this big.
Yeah, and you don't want to penalize those people for running those units or, you know, modeling their figures slightly differently or taller, you know, shorter or whatever. You don't want to penalize anybody or give other players advantages. So I think it's good for tournament purposes.
Absolutely.
For casual, you know, shoot each other, have fun, come to an agreement. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It should be maybe one of the things you talk about with your opponent right before the game, like you're discussing your terrain and what they do. It's like, oh, do you want to play silhouettes or you want to ignore it? Because I've got my Vader that's, you know, the exclusive one that's up on that little plinth with rock, and it's a little bit taller than everything, and everybody can shoot him. And it's like, yeah, okay, no, it's fine.
Yeah, I think we should have a taller silhouette for Vader though, because he was like 9 feet tall. So you
yeah,
know,
that's fair. But again, you can't have an exception for everything. So hopefully this one size fits all. I'm curious if people have started playing this rule and what they think about it so far. But I'm excited. I like it.
I think it's good. And I think for troopers too, sorry, Dan, for cutting you off. I think for troopers too, it makes sense. For vehicles, I hope they leave it the way it is, because I've never really seen this problem with vehicles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, vehicles are so large anyway. Nobody wants to be carrying a bunch of different ones around. So I think for right now, troopers is good. Let vehicles stay the way they are. You know, if you can hide it behind a terrain, great. If not, shoot something.
Yeah, and Infinity, you mentioned War Machines too. Infinity also uses this rule set.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't personally play Infinity. Legion is my first minis game, but I've seen and read a lot of the comparisons that people were making online. Infinity does do it for all sizes of their models, but I agree with Jeff. Keeping it just on the Trooper minis makes it a lot easier than trying to like stand up this like 12-inch silhouette behind my AT-ST. Yeah, I'll put right. My friggin' binder behind him and see, hey, can you shoot him? But no, this will definitely open up a lot of modeling options, because there's been some great Grievous models online of going after the Tartakovsky, jumping with the lightsaber in his foot.
Oh, yeah.
I think LJ has one of those, and it looks amazing. And it would be horrible if he's punished just for having an awesome-looking model.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. This should really help out the people that are getting very creative with their modeling and all that. Yeah. Anything else we want to say on this? At the end of the day, there was somebody that jumped on because I guess one of the recruits, oh, we can just replace all the models with just abstract, you know, plugs of wood or whatever, and we don't have to play with miniatures. And it's, yeah, that's true of any game ever. You can just replace the models with something else if you want to. That's fine. It wouldn't look very good on the table, though, is I think what we're getting.
I mean, there's been games where they give you paper cutouts and they're like, hey, here's your model. You know, here's your Luke Skywalker. It's a paper cutout.
Yeah, I mean, X-Wing and Armada, the entire game mechanics worked solely off the bases. You can play those games without the model on the actual stand at all. So
that's a good comparison, yeah.
And I think, honestly, the template is going to be a very corner case scenario or edge case scenario. You know, it comes down to that last shot of, am I going to shoot this guy off the objective, or is he going to, you know, is he out of sight and I can't do it? I don't think you're going to see this a lot every shot. No. It's because you can look and you can imagine, you know, okay, I can see the base, and, you know, I imagine that there's a cylinder there. No problem. And your opponent's like, yeah, you know, you got line of sight. Go ahead, shoot him.
Yeah. No, I think maybe a couple of times in a game it might show up. Maybe not at all. Then again,
yeah.
Yeah, it also depends on what kind of board you're playing on, what kind of terrain you're trying to sneak around behind. But yeah, hopefully use this as a tool to just bring some clarity to the game and some of the sometimes muddled bits of converting, you know, a tabletop game into a game you can play. But anyways, speaking of games you can play, Tiebreaker's got an update. What's going on with that, Dan?
All right. So for tournament purposes, they're replacing strength of schedule with margin of victory. Again, this is nothing to do with casual games, player kitchen games, but for determining how well you did against your opponents, they've added a new system of margin of victory. Now, margin of victory is a measure of how much you won or lost over your opponent. And the simplified version is they're just going to take all the victory points that you've scored in a round, add them together, and the percentage that's owned by the winning player and the percentages owned by the losing player, those are your margin of victory. So, for example, in our TTS game that we talked about earlier, at the end of the game, Jeff had 3 out of the 5 boxes under his control. I had 1 because he was able to terrain scope 1 leader and kill that leader so that he dropped the box. So for that, we would have calculated 4 victory points were claimed, 75% were owned by Jeff, 25% were owned by me. So he would have gotten 0.75. I would have gotten 0.25 going into the next round. So that 2 players that have the same win-loss record, you compare those margin of victory calculations to see who is the better, you know, 2-1 versus the other 2-1s.
Yeah.
I think this is a great change.
Yeah, I do too. We actually used a very similar system when I was doing Warhammer Fantasy tournaments. It was the 20-0 system, but basically the same idea. You had a better MOV, and which got you better pairings basically going forward.
And it's good because, you know, the old system, strength of schedule, it looked at who you had played and how well they had done. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, if you had 2 people who were both 4-0 and one of those 4-0 people had played somebody who or played 4 opponents who were all 0-4, and then you had the other opponent who was 4-0. They had played a bunch of 3-1 individuals. That 3-1, 4-0 guy, I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers here, but he would be higher up that scale than the opponent that had been, was undefeated and had played, you know, players with more losses. So that system, it seemed to be just a little bit random. You know, you never know who you're going to face. You never know how good players are going to be, or if they're going to, if you have players who are going to concede, you know, right when they show up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
or players that drop.
Yeah,
if a player dropped that you played previously, it just totally tanked your strength of schedule. And
yeah,
because he's finishing the day with like an 0-2 or something like that. And yeah, that's why I always say, if you can, especially if you're at like something like LVO or whatnot, make sure and finish your games if you can get the games in. But anyways, hopefully this will help address some of that, those things as well.
Yeah, I think it's a good system, you know, the same as the silhouette. They're trying to make things fair and even across the board. And, you know, props to FFG for listening to the community, because I think this is the big part of where it's coming from, is the community's like, hey, here's the pros and cons of each, and here's why we should be doing this MOV, and here's how we should be doing it. So I think FFG, with regards to Legion, is doing an amazing job listening to the community and adjusting. And, you know, it's not a knee-jerk reaction. It's well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, what the players want. And it's usually these tournament players who are coming forward with this, casual players. FFG's like, go nuts. Strength of schedule, yeah. MOV.
One.
Who cares?
Original cards.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, let's see. What else is in there? What are some of the details on that, Dan?
Well, they listed a couple other situations of edge cases. So say if you get completely tabled by your opponent, like all of your units are destroyed, even if you have victory points scored, your opponent who tabled you automatically gets 100% MOV on there.
Oh, okay, so table gets a 100%. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good system.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you can table your opponent, definitely do it. It'll get you 100% as opposed to fighting over what they've scored already. If you wanted to concede, they recommend calling a judge over for this, just so it's fair. But if both players agree on it, they can score the game as it is, as it's played currently with the concession. But if both players don't agree on it, the winning player, the person who didn't concede, just gets 100% MOV on there.
Oh, wow.
Be nice to your opponent, because obviously if you plan on conceding, they can just say, nope, I don't agree. Give me my 100%. So, be nice. Talk it out. Work with your opponent. And I mean, if someone concedes with you, consider it. Don't be a jerk about it. If you get a buy, you get MOV equal to the average of all your previous MOVs or all the MOVs that you've gained in the tournament. And if you get a no-show, same thing, the losing player gets 0% and the player who did show up does get their average MOV as well. And I love this corner case that they put in here. If a tournament ends and a player has not played any games, like a combination of buys and no shows, and if for some reason you didn't play a single game, you just get 50% MOV.
Okay. Real quick, double back on something you said there, Dan. So you said if a buy during the buy, a player gets MOV equal to average of the other MOVs gained in the tournament. So does that mean it's calculated at the end? So you get a buy first round, so you don't have any average.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, it gets plugged in if you play the other three rounds or whatever.
Correct. So your true MOV won't be accurately calculated till the very end of the tournament.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure that the tournament tracking or managing software people out there will write all their algorithms to figure this stuff out.
Uh-huh.
But yes, if the player if does get a buy, they get an average of all their MOV scores for the entire tournament, even future scores.
Hmm. Okay. And then so that results, I see in the notes here, win-loss ranking tiebreakers are then averaged of players' MOV scores.
Right. So at the end of the tournament, all the, say, 3-1s, all of their MOVs get averaged, and that's your tournament MOV and how you get ranked at the end of the tournament.
So you might see a lot of last-second movements as those scores get calculated and updated.
Correct.
Interesting.
I think what's interesting
Go ahead.
About the concession one, because you were saying if both players don't agree, the player who concedes gets 0 and the other player gets 100%. And I think what you were saying was good there, you know, be nice to your opponent.
You should always do that and wash your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, wash your hands.
Because I know, like, you know, if it's like turn 4 or something and you've got a good hold on things and your opponent's like, yeah, I'm just going to concede to you. And then you scored as that final round. I know that in Legion, there can be some crazy swings. So if you're going to be like a butt and you're like, I don't concede, you know, be careful because your opponent could be like, okay, and turn that game real quick. So I think that's kind of an interesting, you know, interesting scenario. Because I know if I was like, hey, I'm going to concede to you, you know, I'll get one victory point and you get 4. And they're like, no, I want all 5. If it was me, I'd be like, okay, then I don't concede. Let's go ahead and finish the game and see what happens.
And I think that's probably why they put the proviso in there to call a judge.
Yeah.
That could get sticky really quick, I think. But
yeah, you know. But it really disincentivizes concessions.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's a good game though, because you know we go to a tournament to play.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think there are good times. You know, like in our game last night. You know, Dan had some forces who could potentially knock me off one box, but I did have a lot of stuff that could get back up there and grab that box again. And you know, in the interest of time, really, it sometimes I think is good for you just to be like, I think I can score this point, and it looks like you're going to score, you know, 4 or 3 or whatever. You good to call it good, and, you know, just kind of take a break and refresh your mind. There are times when it's okay. But, yeah, I'm with you, Dan, like where if I can, I want to play that game to the fullest just because I like giving my opponent that chance to turn things around, as weird as that sounds, because sometimes I'm that person that's behind the 8-ball, and I need to turn things around. So those late-game swings, turn 5, turn 6, you do want to see those in tournaments sometimes.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Okay. Anything else in this guide we need to, that is of note?
They actually spelled out and added a section of terrain guidelines. And this is great for stores and locations that don't have, or at least where whoever's running the tournament isn't really into Legion. It gives a great guideline of what terrain should look like on a tournament table.
That's good.
They recommended about 25 to 35% coverage. And the interesting thing, they added guidelines for both the 6x3 and 3x3 tables. Huh. So they're definitely supporting skirmish for the tournament settings.
I do love skirmish.
Oh, yeah.
I think this was a good change, too. And what the 25 to 35%. So they said at a minimum 25%, at a maximum 35%. And then they, you know, they went a little bit further and they said you want a mixture of line of sight blocking, light cover, heavy cover, area, terrain, if you can. So it's really, I mean, honestly, you could look at this for how do I set up a table at home? You know, if I want to play casually, what should it look like? Mm-hmm. Because every now and then you'll see somebody, you know, hey, I ran a teaching game with my friend. And, you know, yeah, sometimes you are limited on what you can put out there, but there's no limit to your imagination. You know, you throw a fork down and be like, hey, this is light cover, you know, and it doesn't really matter. Play with what you've got. But this is a good, not just, you know, for tournament guidelines, it's great because it does even the playing field of, you know, what stores are doing across the country and globe. But again, it's good for the casual player. How do I set my board up? I don't know. I've never built a board before. It'd be a good how-to.
Well, to bring it back, do you think Tabletop Simulator follows that with those kind of pre-configured boards?
I think so, yeah. It looks pretty good. They have, if you hover your mouse over things, it'll give you a definition of what units will get cover and how you get cover and the difficulty moving through the terrain. So yeah, Tabletop Simulator does a really good job with it.
Okay. Round timers, now officially 150 minutes. And that's including the entire shebang, right?
Correct. So that they upped it from 120 minutes, which is great because, well, at least other tournaments like LVO we went to, they did the 120 minutes, but they did 15 minutes of setup and 15 minutes overtime. So it technically made it 150 minutes.
Effectively 150, right.
Yeah. So it's great that they are actually supporting it and they've noticed that, hey, we need a little more time because not every game is going six rounds. And it's helpful that they're able to give us more time on that officially.
Nice.
I think 150 minute is it's a good number. At LVO, I know you guys ran most of your games were to turn six or close, you know, to a concession like round five.
Right.
All right, you know, hey, good game, you won.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's good. Most of my games LVO went either to round six and, you know, we finished maybe 10, 15 minutes early, or we were down to that, you know, last like, okay, don't start another round. You know, the 15 minutes you have overage. And then we just finished our last round. And most of the time we were like in that late turn five, just starting turn six kind of area. So I think it's a good change. You don't feel rushed. You still have to move along, but it's good. I like it.
Or just do what I do, the pro gamer move, and lose really quick, and that gives you more time at the bar.
Yeah, Matt's top tips.
Yep, there it is. Write that one down. Oh, okay, so any final thoughts on this before we wrap up this topic?
One other small thing I saw in here is they actually explicitly stated for competitive tier tournaments, all players are now required to put their randomized order tokens in an opaque container or bag. So the stat shuffle and stack system is not allowed at competitive tier tournaments now. It has to be in a bag.
They've spelled it out. This is the way, and there shall be no deviations.
It's good.
So my sandwich Ziploc bag isn't going to fly?
Unless you get the...
as long as it's opaque.
Yeah, you have to get the ones with the Star Wars print, or if they're out of that, you know, the other Disney ones like Frozen.
Well, I had a sandwich in it still, so that kind of...
The sandwich blocks the view of the token, so...
Yeah. But cool. Yeah, some exciting changes. Definitely, at least we got time to think about it right now. But hopefully you guys are all as excited as... well, at least I know I am. Dan, do you get excited about things? I think you do.
You get rarely.
Inferno.
Only about Aiden, yes.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm not even a big competitive player. I'm competitive in nature, but it's like nice to see tournament. I'm competitive, but like as far as competitive play, I go out every now and then.
Right on. But
I think it's good, yeah, to level that playing field, to make everything even, to take out all those weird anomalies, and yeah, just defining things. So you have, you know, your casual players just have fun, and then tournament players really taking a look at making things that even playing field. And yeah, it's good. It's a good direction for the game.
And still having fun.
And still having fun, yeah.
They're not mutually exclusive at all. And definitely we got reminded, LJ put up a fantastic post of just talking about the Legion community he's come to know and running events and all these great pictures and all that. And I was like, ah, man, don't lose sight. That's the goal at the end of the day. Building community, having good games with each other and keeping things on the up and up and, you know, positive.
But yeah, I still think LVO 2020 was one of the best events I've gone to. It was just a lot of fun. The community was great. The games were great. And or sorry, 2019, the first one that I went to. And then 2020 was, again, you know, it was even bigger and great.
Yeah, both of them have been fantastic, and I definitely want to get to more. But okay, I think we'll wrap up there. Of course, we got to check in and thank our Patreon supporters. Thank you guys so much. Jeff, we have kind of an update. Well, not really an update. What's going on with the dice situation?
Yeah, so we have all the dice. We have our list of who's getting it. Again, we're just kind of waiting for everything to settle down.
Yeah,
I know I drove by the post office the other day, and again, it was a madhouse. So I'm sorry, my health comes first. I want to get you these guys, or I want to get these dice to you guys, but I've got a family to think of and kids. I can't risk that, you know, getting sick for some dice.
No, absolutely. And don't worry, they're not going anywhere. We'll send them out as quickly as we can, as soon as it's practically safe to. Well, safe enough.
Yep. And we want you guys to stay safe too. You know, if you're having to go to the post office or, you know, a PO box or something to pick up your dice, yeah, we don't want that. I know most of cases it's going to go to your house, but yeah, they're there. They look great. I pass them every now and then and just look at them. Can't wait to send them out.
We're not sliding the time frame. So we were committing earlier to doing a new Patreon reward every quarter or so. Just because the delivery fulfillment sliding back on this one doesn't mean we're going to slide the next thing. We're actually going to be spoiling that here in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, thanks again, everybody that's supporting. Dan, Jeff, any last thoughts there?
Oh yeah, no, I showed you guys the samples of what we're doing on quarter two. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's very exciting.
Yeah. Plus,
go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just going to say it's very exciting stuff. I can't wait to share it with everybody. Over to you, Jeff.
Yeah, I was going to echo your sentiment, you know, thanking the people who are still supporting. I know that it's a crazy time right now. And you know, for some people, money's tight. For other people, it's, you know, they're able to float by a little bit. So anybody that is supporting, I know we appreciate it. It in the long run, it's going to help us bring you more stuff, more content, more Patreon rewards. So thanks. Yeah.
But who knew that it was actually the Mandalorians that were way ahead? Well, I guess Darth Vader, too. Wearing respirators all the time, never taking the helmet off.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, it's not come to the dark side, we have cookies anymore. It's come to the dark side, we have gloves and masks.
We do. We got filters on those masks. So, but anyways, thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with, we'll see what kind of world we live in a couple of weeks. Seems like it's changing rapidly now. But take care.
This concludes the current episode of the Legion Outriders podcast. You may cultivate a tactical advantage by observing the Outriders on Facebook or Twitter at Legion Outriders. Wisdom advocates subscribing to the podcast. Acting otherwise is